What a great time to be looking up at the stars. Winter's a great time to look at the stars. And on the show today, we'll tell you what to look for. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you with us. Astronomy expert Paul Kinzer back with us. Paul's the author of Stargazing Basics, Getting Started in Recreational Astronomy. He's a member of the La Crosse Area Astronomy Club. And besides talking about the night sky, Paul has some astronomy gifts to recommend. So, what are your questions about space? Join in. Give a call at 800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Paul Kinzer, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Oh, it's great to be with you.
When we talked to you in December, we like to get ideas for astronomy gifts, and let's talk about a few just to get things going. What's good for a beginner, for example?
Well, if it's somebody who's just getting into it and, you know, you're absolutely just starting out, I would suggest something very simple. You can get a thing. It's called a planisphere or a planisphere. It can be pronounced either way. It's a device you can use that'll help you know what's in the night sky at any minute of any day, any year. It's two wheels, a wheel within a wheel, and you match on one wheel the date to the time on the other wheel. And then there's this oval shape in the middle that will show you the night sky, all the constellations that are up there. The night sky is kind of complicated if you don't quite understand what happens. If you go outside in July and it's dark and you look up at the sky and then you do the same thing in December, you'll be seeing a completely different set of stars, especially to the south, and they'll all be in different places. But just using one of these, it makes it fairly quickly easy to understand, oh, now I get how things change. And then you can use that and go up and just have it with you and aim it at the sky and find your way around. That's a great thing to use together, too, to do as a family or with friends to figure out the night sky.
Yeah. And I know, and then, you've mentioned that sometimes a good pair of binoculars is a better idea than a telescope.
I absolutely think so, especially because no matter what, your telescope's going to, if you have a telescope, it's going to take some time to get out, to set up. A pair of binoculars, you just put them around your neck, go outside, look up at the sky, and if you've used binoculars during the day, it'll be easy enough. You just see something in the sky and put the binoculars in front of your eye. And the thing that a lot of people don't understand about telescopes and binoculars, really, they're two small telescopes, they don't just make things bigger. I mean, we all notice that. They make things brighter. They bring more light to your eye. So if there's something up in the night sky and you want to make it look bigger, sure. But if you bring it in and it's dim, then you can see much more detail with a pair of binoculars. For example, with any decent pair of binoculars that are kind of appropriate for astronomy, and you should look for certain things, but any of them, your eyes can see maybe a couple of thousand stars. If you use a pair of binoculars, you can see over 100,000 stars. You can see the four of the moons around Jupiter. You can see craters on the moon. You can see the Milky Way going across the sky. So many things to see in it with a simple pair of binoculars. And they're fairly inexpensive. And yeah, a good astronomy pair might be a little more expensive, but it's such a good thing to get. For someone who's just starting interest, there's none of the possible frustration with getting started with a telescope. Any telescope's going to take a little bit of learning. Binoculars, not so much.
Yeah, and the power of those?
Well, that's the thing. Again, a lot of people think about power, and that's okay. I think for an adult, the best size of binoculars would be called 10 by 50. And those numbers, the first one means how much it magnifies things. So 10 magnified 10 times. And the 50 means how big the front lens, the big lens on the binoculars are. And that would be 50 millimeters. That's a really good size to get. It's not so big that it gets heavy in your hands. And that 50 millimeters will bring in a lot of light. But if you had a 7 by 35, which is a smaller but also very common size, those also do a lot. Getting much smaller with that front lens, I think you're getting away from astronomy binoculars, but even those will do more than just your eyes.
Let's go to John in Algoma, who has a question relating to this, I believe. John, hi.
Hi, it's really good to hear you. I have a question about gifts. My older brother is an astronomer, and in fact has taught astronomy and physics for the last 30 years in Wisconsin, and used to run the Yerkes Observatory
in
Wisconsin. And I was wondering what kind of gift one can get for a true astronomer.
Yeah.
Wow, you're way above my pay grade here. gosh, I guess what would pop into my head is if it were me, I'd probably look for something unique, something maybe collectible. Every once in a while I'll see, and I don't know what your budget is, but I'll see a telescope maybe that was owned by someone historically important. Those sometimes come up there, or autographed things. And I guess it depends on if he had a specific interest. I guess that's where I would go. I don't know what to get. I would ask, if I were in his presence, I'd ask, what should I get for me? Because I'm sure he has vastly more knowledge than I would. But that's, I guess, what I would do. I would try and find, you know, maybe some old instrument that maybe even might be a little obsolete today, but just looks really beautiful. There's a lot of really lovely old brass things that they made back in the day. So that's just what popped into my head.
That's a really good idea, Paul. Is there any kind of website or any place to go to where you might find things like that? Or?
I would say maybe the cloudynights.com. You might even post your question there. They have a whole bunch of forums for all different types of astronomy, but they also have a classified section where many, many folks, many of them who've been astronomers for decades, have actual things that they refurbish or they have up for sale, or they might know if you had a specific idea, if you went down this rabbit hole and decided, you know what, I bet he'd like X, there'd be so much help. I know there's an antiques telescope organization that might be able to help with that kind of thing as well. And I'm just sticking my nose into your business here because I'm not sure what he would like, but that's just my idea.
Cloudynights.com.
Yeah, one word, Cloudy Nights. It's where astronomers go when it's cloudy.
Okay.
Yeah.
John, does that help? We may have lost John there.
Yeah,
Thanks so much. You know, books are always a great idea. You know, I would recommend your book, Stargazing Basics, Getting Started in Recreational Astronomy. It's a great book. But other recommendations?
Well, there's one that was written for children. It's called The Stars, A New Way to See Them. And it originally came out in 1952. It was written by H.A. Rey. He wrote the Curious George books, the Curious Little Monkey.
Yeah.
And this book was written because he, like me, he's not a professional astronomer, but he loved astronomy and he knew the constellations and he wanted to share it with his family. He couldn't find a book that really helped you find the constellations in the sky. So he wrote one. And it does more than that. It explains why does the night sky change? How does it look from night to night? It gets some history in there. And he was originally from Germany, so English wasn't his first language. So he actually writes in very, very clear ways explaining that. And there's humor in there, too, and some little drawings. And another one that I would recommend, if you're really going to get into astronomy, you're going to want some charts, some maps of the sky to help you find your way around. If you say, read an article and saw, well, there's a comet in the constellation Taurus right now. Well, The Stars, A New Way to See Them, that does have charts of all the constellations, and that would help you. But it doesn't have very detailed maps. And so you might want to get a field guide to the night sky. And there are a lot of them, but the one I'm recommending is called the Pocket Sky Atlas. It's from the publishers of Sky and Telescope magazine. And Sky and Telescope magazine would also be a nice gift. It comes out once a month. And I am currently reading the January issue. But the Pocket Sky Atlas arranges their maps differently. A lot of field guides, they just go alphabetically by constellation. So you're jumping around from spot to spot in the sky. This book gives chunks. It divides the sky, the big globe of the sky, up into a bunch of basically puzzle pieces from east to west all the way around the sky.
That's perfect. Well, we can talk some more about that with our guests. But also, there's lots going on in the night sky, and we'll talk about that right after we take a look at the news. Stay with us. Talking about astronomy on the program today, Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Paul Kinzer back with us in the studio is the author of Stargazing Basics, Getting Started in Recreational Astronomy, a member of the La Crosse Area Astronomy Club, also has a portable planetarium and does shows all over the state when there isn't a pandemic. So we're talking with him about what you can see in the night sky at this time of the year and taking your questions. So what would you like to know about it, the night sky? Give a call, 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. And, Paul, we've got lots of really kind of interesting things going on. Jupiter and Saturn.
Yeah, that's amazing. You know, I get out of my job every day at 5:30, and it still seems weird. I'm 60 years old, but that at 5:30, it's dark. It's dark out, and I step out, and I have a view of the western sky, and there's a very bright star low in the west, but that star is the planet Jupiter, and if you look up and to the left, there's a much dimmer one, and that's the planet Saturn. And for weeks now, months really, they've been getting closer to and closer together in our night sky, and on the night of the 21st of this month, the winter solstice, or the shortest day, longest night of the year, they will be so close in the sky, they will look pretty much almost like one star. But if you looked at them with binoculars, or better yet, a telescope, you'd be able to see them one-fifth of the diameter of the moon, if you can imagine that. Think of the full moon. They will be one-fifth that width from each other. Their moons, if you were looking through a telescope, it would be hard to tell, oh, I can see some moons, but are they Saturn's or are they Jupiter's? They haven't been this close together where you could see them since the year 1226. So it's something to keep watching. Every night, it's just very exciting. I like it. I like it. It's fun.
Do you see it in the morning, like 5:30, 6 in the morning?
I don't think so, because they set a couple hours after the sun now, so they wouldn't rise until after. So, yeah, that's not something you're going to see in the morning sky right now.
That's too bad. So I'm not seeing that on my morning.
Yeah, I am not, I'll be honest with you, I'm not a morning person, so I'm not as aware of what's going on in the morning sky, but I believe Venus is something that you can see in the morning skies, and it is the brightest planet in our sky most of the time.
Yeah. Leslie in Cottage Grove.
I think I've lost Larry.
Oh, Leslie in Cottage Grove is up next. Let's go there. Hi, Leslie.
Right. Hi. Hello. I have a question regarding a telescope, a fabulous telescope I received for my birthday. It's probably a beginner's type. It's a Celestron Star Sense Explorer. I don't mean to be pitching a product, but after it works with your phone. So there's a little phone mount on it, and you can, after you've tuned it up, you know, pointed it at a farmhouse far away or something and sighted the telescope and set everything up, you can say, I'd like to see Mars tonight, and it will point you at it, or I'd like to see the Messier, whatever the different constellation clusters
sure.
are, and it'll find it. It'll help you find it.
Mm-hmm.
It's very fun. There's
yeah,
all some information in there, but I'm hoping that's a good thing. And I couldn't figure out the zeniths and azimuths and stuff.
Yeah. Any telescope that allows you to look at what you want to look at, lucky you, that's great. And they're getting better and better and less and less expensive. What you have would have seemed science fiction even 20 years ago, and now it's available in an amateur telescope. I envy you. I do enjoy finding things myself with my telescope, hunting them down. It's sort of like bird watching to me. On the other hand, there are times when I would like to just see what's up there without all the setup. And I haven't used that particular telescope, though I've read about it, and wow, that's great.
You got a good gift there, Leslie.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for calling. That's a beauty. Bob in Dubuque, Iowa, your turn. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Larry and Paul. Thank you. Great program here. Paul, I think about 3 or 4 months ago, I heard you on, and you were recommending a AWB One Sky Reflector Telescope for $199,
yep.
and you said it was a scope that you could live with almost forever.
That's...
I have tried to get that, and the website doesn't work.
Oh, no.
They aren't making that anymore for a while.
Okay.
And I tried several. How in the world do you ever find that telescope?
Yeah, and I could see why that would be a thing. I mean, it's the deal that Celestron makes these telescopes or has them made, and the deal was that they would give all of their profits. First, they'd offer it at a very low price, and they'd give all their profits to Astronomy Without Borders. And I haven't checked in a few months, so I don't know about your issue. I know that they are a very popular telescope, and I don't know if it's because of the pandemic or if it's maybe the pandemic has led to employees not working, or maybe it's led to millions of people wanting that telescope. I'm not sure. And maybe, yeah, I don't know what to say about that, but that's a shame to hear that because it's a wonderful program. I know libraries were buying those telescopes and people could check them out like they could check out a book. I'm sorry to hear that because that is, again, if you said recommend a telescope, that right now for someone who had never had one, that would be my recommendation. But it sounds like now it can't be.
Oh,
that's
a shame, Bob.
And when I get off the radio, I'm going to try and check myself. And by the way, I just want to say that I'm always happy to answer questions after the show is over. And people, usually after the show, I get one or two queries. But I'd be happy to answer plenty more and go into more detail because I know we don't have that much time.
Yeah, and what's your? How do we find your website?
You can go to the website, which I haven't updated in the longest time. That's called Seeing Stars WI. That's all one word, seeingstarswi.wordpress.com. And there you can find out more about what I do with my planetarium and the book. But you can also get my email address there, which is winnapaul@centurytel.net. You can also just do a Google search or any search for Kinzer and Stargazing Basics, and you should find a way to get hold of me there, too.
Yeah, okay. And since you're going to be looking at it, Bob, you may want to shoot an email to Paul.
Yeah, I want to find out more because I know there are people on Cloudy Nights who are very active about this telescope. There's a very long, long thread about modifications and things to do with this telescope at Cloudy Nights.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, Bob, maybe shoot an email a little later on, and Paul will have we'll be doing a little research on this, and we'll get back to you. I wanted the Gemini meteor shower.
Yeah, the Geminids. They are peaking very soon, but you could also just go out right now because now that we have cameras on telescopes that are on all night long in lots of places on the world, around the world, we've found that meteor showers, which are times in the year when we pass through the old debris left by comets going around the sun, when we pass, when the Earth passes through them, we get lots and lots of meteors, which are basically little dust and pebbles and rocks in the sky, in the space, that hit our atmosphere. And the Geminid meteor shower is really one of the best of the year, except that it's in December, and it's cold. But there could be up to 120 meteors per hour if you're in the exact right conditions. That means you could see two every minute. And some people might say that's not that much, but it's a lot. It's a lot. And all you have to do is go outside and look up. And on Sunday night, the 13th of December, very coming up, that's going to be the peak. And meteor showers are actually best after midnight. And that's because the Earth has spun around so that we're actually plowing right through the tail of the comet. But all the time you can see meteors, and this is a really good meteor shower.
Paul Kinzer, our guest. Questions or comments for him, I hope you'll join in. The open lines get you on pretty quickly here at 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or email at ideas@wpr.org. We just heard about a probe from China landing on the moon. What was its mission? Do you know?
Its mission, and I don't know how to, it's Chang'e or Chang'e 5, and it landed on the way up in the north of the moon from Earth's vision. It landed to bring lunar, they call it soil, but to me soil has life in it. So lunar dust and small rocks. It had a drill on it, and it pulled out some debris, and it brought it back to Earth, or it's back to Earth now. And that's the first time anything's been brought back from the moon since 1973 or 2. I think the Russians brought some back. The interesting thing was it was a complicated mission, sort of like the Apollo mission, where a lander went down while another satellite was in orbit of the moon. Then the lander, part of the lander came back, dropped the soil in the orbiter, and then the orbiter came back and sent down that soil to Earth. And now it's been retrieved, and it will be studied. And China has very, very large goals. This, in a way, was practice for sending people back to the moon, which they hope to do sometime not too far in the future.
Hmm. And there's a Japanese probe on an asteroid, I believe.
Yeah, and an American one. Two small asteroids. Both an American probe and a Japanese probe went to two small, they call them near-Earth asteroids. They have orbits that get very near to Earth, and one at least of these two may, in a few centuries, smack into the Earth. So we're trying to find out, what are they made of, how do they tick, what's going on with them? And they collected samples, which isn't easy to do on these tiny asteroids, because you know, when you land on Earth or the moon, gravity pulls you down. But when you try and land on these tiny things, which have very little gravitational pull, you tend to bounce off. So they have to find a way to attach. But both of them are also bringing samples back. So we're going to get samples from the moon and a couple of asteroids. So that's pretty neat to me.
Yeah, it really is. Arecibo Telescope, is it?
Arecibo.
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 Yeah, and that is amazing. And there's a website I go to every day called Astronomy Picture of the Day, or APOD. So if you just do a search for Astronomy Picture of the Day, it's run by a couple of astronomers, and every day they post photos or videos of something in news, in astronomy news. And today, right now, I just checked, they have a video of this historic and very important radio telescope in Puerto Rico that collapsed on December 1st. And it's pretty intense video. A piece of the telescope fell onto the main dish of the telescope. The main dish of the telescope is 1,000 feet across. And this 600-ton chunk of machinery fell into that dish, and it's over now. They knew months ago there were a couple of cables that snapped. This observatory is over 50 years old. And a cable snapped, so they cleared people out of there, and then another one did, and it suddenly just all went down. And it all went down right while they were checking over a piece of it with a drone. So the video is amazing.
Oh, so they got the...
Yeah, they it's amazing and very sad. It's very sad. Yeah.
Mike in Milwaukee, let's give you a chance. Hi, Mike.
Good afternoon, Nate. I was just curious about something regarding the European Space Agency vehicle that was sent several years ago to catch up with and land on a comet. And on the documentary, it said that it had to revolve the Earth three times to get a slingshot effect to get enough speed to accomplish its mission. And they did say that each time that it spun around the Earth, that it slowed down, I guess, the spin of the Earth by a millionth of something. And
yeah.
I was wondering if that would have been a momentary or permanent alteration.
I believe it's permanent, but I would bet it would be a lot less than a millionth of a millionth, maybe. It's basically stealing, and I'm not a physicist, but it took some of our rotational momentum by swinging around us. The tiny bit of its own momentum interacted with ours and took some of it. And actually, most interplanetary probes now, to get up to speed, they go around Venus a couple of times, or they use Jupiter as a slingshot. That's what they say. They call it a slingshot effect, and they speed up. And because they're a trillionth or whatever it is of the mass of the planet they're going around, they can kick up to a much higher speed, and it barely affects us. So,
there we go. Mike, thank you. Dennis in Two Rivers, your turn. Hi, Dennis.
Hi. I've heard about the possibility of colonies on the moon. It just doesn't seem like it all that wise with all the craters on the moon. I just wonder, are there still asteroids hitting the moon?
There are, but they're not. The surface of the moon, almost everything on there, all the craters that you can see, are more than a billion years old. Most of them came during the time the solar system was forming, and back then there were many, many, many more asteroids floating around, and they've smacked into each other, and for the most part, they're gone because they've joined the planets. Earth had as many craters as the moon, but wind and water have washed them away, so we don't see them. But, you know, even the Earth, the dinosaurs were killed by an asteroid. We're pretty convinced of that now. And like I said a little while ago, there are some asteroids that we're now tracking. They're not the big dinosaur killers that you know, hit the Earth millions of years ago, but they're large enough that if they hit the Earth, if they hit anywhere near a city, that city would be gone. So some people say they're kind of the biggest threat we face right now. The chance of one hitting the Earth is very, very tiny. But the devastation they would cause if they did hit the Earth would be very, very great. And there's also a threat that we might be able to do something about if we have enough warning. Unlike the two movies they made where they blow them up, if you blew a big rock up into a bunch of littler rocks, those littler rocks would still hit the Earth and cause at least as much damage. So there's a lot of work going on with that right now.
Yeah, thank you, Dennis. Appreciate your call. Pat in Madison, I think she was kind of referencing back to the person who had the astronomer brother-in-law or uncle that he wanted to get a gift for. But this could work for anybody. She called to recommend the online gift shop at the Royal Observatory in London.
Oh, yeah.
For cool gifts. The Royal Observatory in London has some really cool gifts. That was pretty cool. Laura in Superior called to ask you to talk about this summer's supermoon.
Yeah, supermoon. A supermoon, I'm going to just say it was kind of created by journalists. It simply means, typically, it means the largest full moon of the year. The moon is in orbit around the Earth, and the orbit isn't circular. So sometimes the moon is closer to the Earth, and other times it's farther away. And if you happen to have a full moon at the time that it's closest to us in its orbit, that will be the biggest full moon of that year, and we call it a supermoon. Typically, it's only 10 or 11% bigger than the smallest moon of the year, which would be the one that happened when it was furthest. You can, if you took a picture of that large full moon and then took a picture of the small one, you can compare them side by side and see, oh, yeah, it's bigger. But if you just go out and look at it, the human eye doesn't really detect the difference. It's fun to know, and it's fun to go out, and any reason to go out and look at the sky is a good one. But sort of like now they call a lunar eclipse, they call that a blood moon. That was just another term created by journalists. there's no blood involved.
Sandy in Eau Claire wonders if you could, there's a specific type or brand of planisphere you would recommend. She Googled and found several options.
I think they're all fairly similar. The way they would improve in quality probably would be by how big they are, because simply by being bigger, you'd be able to put more stars in the oval window that you would see. Trying to get one that is made of plastic or plastic coated is better, because then you can have it outside. Some of them are paper. You can have it outside, and if it's dewy or whatever, they're not going to get damaged. They'll last longer. You can get one for free by doing a search for Uncle Al's Sky Wheel. Uncle Al's Sky Wheel. And that leads you to a website where you can download a PDF of 2 pages, and then you print them out on cardstock, do a little cutting and folding, and boom, you have one for free.
There,
so that's kind of nice. You can even do, you know, if you have a group of kids you're working with, say, you could download a dozen of them, and each of them could have one.
Paul, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us today. I really appreciate it. Look forward to our next visit. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Paul Kinzer, author of Stargazing Basics, Getting Started in Recreational Astronomy. Say, don't forget to check out our blog. We have a recent post about creating your own indoor garden this winter. There's a piece about what's wrong with the term guilty pleasures. And just from our sports show yesterday, an article about the sport of lacrosse in Wisconsin. So all of that there at WPR.org/Larry. Thanks for listening. Please stay with us. Lots in store. I'm Larry Mealer.